And it is my delight once again to welcome Dave Rico to Dr. David Rico to this venue. He has spoken here many times before, and he has had many occasions to speak here because he is incredibly prolific and has many books, as you see here on these tables. And this isn't even all of them, but this is a lot of them. But tonight, his topic will be Embracing the Shadow, Discovering the Hidden Riches in Our Relationships, which is a CD set published by Shambhala Audio. And my understanding is that this was a Spirit Rock, a recording of a Spirit Rock event that Dave led and created. And so we are delighted once again to have you back. Thank you so much. Welcome him, please.
Thank you all. And yes, this is a two-day workshop that I gave at Spirit Rock Buddhist Retreat Center. And it's about how the dark side can come up in relationships. Maybe some of you have noticed that. Something about being in a relationship could bring out the worst in you. You hear yourself saying things that you never thought you would say. You ask yourself, do I have a meanness in me that I've never noticed before? Do I have a selfishness in me? Most of all, do I have a tendency to retaliate, even secretly, within the relationship? And some of the things you hear yourself saying sound something like what you heard your parents say. It's as if their shadow side had carried over in some way. And of course, when you choose a partner, you're choosing to be nurtured by one person. That's something like how life began. We were born to a mother who was there to nurture us, to feed us, take care of us. And somehow that archetype settles in us that it's myself and someone, and that that's all you really need. And gradually you notice father in the picture, and then you have more of a family archetype. But there's something about the presence of someone very close that starts to jiggle parts of ourselves that we may not ever have noticed and that we don't really like about ourselves. Jung called that the negative shadow. He used the word shadow because a shadow, when we're standing in the sun and the shadow is behind us, it seems as if the shadow is a separate reality, but actually it's being projected by us, hence the word shadow. And not only did he say there was a negative shadow, but he said there's a positive shadow too. That is all the wonderful potential, all the wonderful talents and gifts that are in us that, as Joseph Campbell says, we have not dared to expose. And so what we do is we admire other people who have the talents and gifts that we have not expressed. And Jung calls that the positive shadow. And we dislike or even hate the people who have qualities that are in us but we don't want to admit are in us. He calls that projecting the negative shadow. So relationship is the place. By relationship, I mean not only intimate relationships, but any relationships bring out both the positive and negative. Positive ones come out mainly in friendships. As you admire your friends and you genuinely like them, and often they have qualities that you have too, but you just haven't yet fully expressed them. And then the negative qualities will come out like towards your boss or towards someone at work. It comes out more subtly in a relationship, especially when the romance part is over. In the romance part, you see the positive shadow, you see all the admirable, wonderful qualities. And then when you go into phase two, which is conflict, you start to notice what might be called the dark side. Not dark complexion-wise, but having more sinister purposes. Everybody follow so far? I'm just giving kind of an overall picture. And also, has this been somewhat of your experience? Okay, so what I'm doing in the workshop, after presenting this little introduction, is I try to go into what are some of the things that we've learned from Buddhism that could help us to deal with our shadow side. And the interesting thing about the shadow is that it contains vast riches of creativity. All we have to do is really work with what might be called our shortcomings, and gradually they show themselves to have some hidden kernel of value. Let's use a simple example. Let's say the thing you dislike most about your partner is that he or she is very controlling. And you also didn't like this about your mother or father. And of course, when we say we don't like something, we set up a distance between ourselves and the other person. So it seems as if, well, he's like that and I'm not like that. This is where we make our mistake. Because you would only be upset by how someone behaves if that was also in yourself. This is the basic concept of the shadow. So what would it look like if you, let's just use a simple example. Let's say you had a friend who was controlling. Go into the movie theater together. I have to sit in the middle. All right. And you notice this a lot. He just has to have it a certain way. And you go along with it because it's not that big a deal. What you're doing is you're noticing that he is controlling, but you're not upset by it. When you're not upset by it, it's not the shadow. It's just plain information. That's why you're not upset. When you get all upset about how your partner is, the upsetness is the key that points to something in yourself that is like that. And hence, your own shadow. You're looking at your own shadow, thinking it's the other person. Everybody follow so far? So let's use the example of controlling. Let's say what bothers you most is how controlling your partner is or tries to be. And if you were to have a reduced enough ego that you could admit that I too am somehow manipulative and demanding, although I don't do it quite so obviously as he or she does, I can get away with it a little more. But I have it in me too. The way to work with it is to find the golden kernel of value in being controlling. What would this be? It's pretty simple and straightforward. A controlling person has the quality of being able to get things done. Might also have the quality of leadership. Might also have the quality of knowing how to organize things, how to coordinate things, how to make sure that there's follow-through. Those are many wonderful qualities all within the controlling. It's just the one thing that throws it off when they interfere with other people's freedom. That's the part that doesn't work. But the other qualities of it are really valuable. So the way you work with your own shadow is you look for that valuable kernel of goodness. It's like saying that there is light in every person. There is light in every person, like the Quaker kind of statement, does not mean there's no darkness. It means within the dark side is something that can be brought into the light. So within the controlling person is something that can be brought into the light of accomplishing things, of getting things done in an orderly way. Everybody following so far? You get the idea? I'm going to use some examples that I have here in the book. Let's say arrogance. You don't like this quality. But within the arrogance is a kernel of lively energy, which is self-confidence. It's just that he's overdoing it when he's arrogant. If only he could go to the center, that's the self-confidence. Far left is the arrogance, too much self-confidence. Far right is the diffidence, to put yourself down. That's the lack of self-confidence. And every single quality in us has this possibility of coming into the light. Let's take clinging. Positive side is loyalty. It's just that it doesn't look right when the loyalty turns into forcing yourself on someone. So let's say that we're going to notice parts of ourselves in the way we react to the people with whom we relate, whether it be intimate relationship or friendship or people at work. They especially bring it out. Everybody follow so far? Any questions on this part? Rob, could I have a little water?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Or maybe Jim can get it. Yeah.
What is the thing that's bothering you or bugging you about the person? It's, you're directly affected by it, like it's anger outburst. I mean, that
yes.
might not be you have anger, but you are in the trajectory of anger, and that would be natural to have it bother you.
Yes, it's only when it bothers you across the board in everyone and sticks in your craw as something that makes you want to retaliate. It's not, what you're saying is more like taking it as scary information and wanting to get away from it. That would not be the shadow.
It has a hook.
It has a hook, yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The shadow is unconscious, hence dark side. Not in the light, not in the light of consciousness. I'm thinking of this poem by Emily Dickinson. This may help us understand it. And she wrote this poem during the Civil War. But it seems like she had a very clear picture of what the shadow was about. It's easy to understand, so just follow along. One need not be a chamber to be haunted. One need not be a house. The brain has corridors surpassing material place. Far safer of a midnight meeting, external ghost, than the interior confronting that cooler host. far safer through an abbey gallop, the stones a chase, than unarmed one's self encounter in a lonesome place. Ourself, behind ourself, concealed, should startle most. Assassin hid in our apartment, be horror's least. The body borrows a revolver and bolts the door, or looking a superior specter or more. Everybody follow? And she just doesn't let us get away with anything in that poem. She just stays on it. Ourself behind ourself concealed. That's what should startle you, not the actual person that bothers you. That's small potatoes compared to what you have hidden in yourself. And here you went and bought a gun so you could fight him off, unaware that there's a kind of enemy within. And as long as you're not bringing him out into the light, he gets more and more aggressive. What is this enemy? It's the part of ourselves that moves in the direction of greed, hate, and ignorance. What in Buddhism are called the three poisons of our enlightened life. So if, when I notice my greed, and I say, okay, what is the valuable kernel in it? There's valuable kernel of greed is the ability to take care of myself, to put away for a rainy day. But when I overdo it, go to the far side of the spectrum, then it turns into greed instead of simple self-caring. Instead of hating, I need to take a stand against injustice, to be aggressive in how I fight for the rights of myself and others. That's the positive kernel in the hate. And the ignorance is a kind of openness, a sense of wonder. Let me discover the world anew all the time. This would be an example of how you start to use Buddhist perspectives to work with the shadow. Question?
I'm wondering where the name of hypocrisy fits into the study. In the name of virtue, you know, of course, what the book in the Bible about the one who picks it, is it the mote?
Like cast the first stone?
No, picks at the mote in his father's eye.
Oh, yeah.
And ignores the log in his eye. And is it virtue that sees that in yourself before you point the finger?
Well, once you become conscious of the work that is required for you to locate your own dark side, knowing that it contains a lot of creativity, that gives you some hope, and that the main way to find out what's in that dark side of yourself is what bothers you most about other people, or what do you most admire in them. Now, this would change the way we are in relationships, because it would be the end of blaming. So that's where we usually go with this. We blame the other person for being so controlling, or blame the other person for being so clinging, or whatever it might be. And as long as we're doing that, we maintain the separation, the division, the sense of adversarial conflict And in Buddhist teaching, we're trying to move that toward loving kindness.
How do I? What you're really blaming the other person for is reminding you of yourself.
Exactly. Yes, I don't like how you remind me of something in me. It only bothers us because it's in us. It can't bother us if it's not in us.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. You can take it from me. I mean, the example that you gave, another way that you could be bothered is by the injustice in a society. But when you see the injustice, you take some type of political action to try to remedy the situation. You put heart into it to try to work with those who are perpetrating the injustice so that they could see the light. That's very different from what you do with the shadow. You blame, you hate, you judge, you push them away. That shows you that it has something to do with you. Whereas when you took a stand against some type of inequality in our society and you really put your heart into it, it's not the shadow side, it's the side that is moved by injustice and wants to make a difference. See the distinction?
Blame is.
I mean, the way to see the distinction is, what does it lead you to do? Does it lead you to hate more and to judge and to reject? Or does it move you toward those who are unfair so that you could help convert them, bring out the light that's in them? That is not going to be an indicator of your shadow, is going to be an indicator of the sense of justice that's in every one of us. Question?
Blame is an addiction.
Yes.
And a big part of the problem has.
Yeah, we keep moving in that direction.
With the character of the addict.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Other questions about this? I know it's a slippery topic because, I mean, it's hard to get a handle on it, and nobody really wants to admit that he or she has the qualities that we strongly dislike in others.
I have a question.
Kind of point. But remember, this is not pointing the finger at you in a judgmental way. This is showing you where the gold in you is hidden. Once you see it that way, then you want the dark side to come out so you can bring it into the light. First you, and then, yeah.
So, I'm just thinking about a situation I encountered recently at work where someone was trying to point out all the things that were wrong with me and get rid of me.
Uh-huh.
And as this was starting to unfold, I was thinking, okay, we must have something to teach each other here. But it was real. Initially, my reaction was jerk. But you know, now what I'm seeing is I'm starting to try to look at, okay, why does this person choose this particular action in this situation? What was it that I might have triggered in him? Something that I have to look at. So. It kind of, to me, it felt like I was dancing with the shadow and also the creative aspect of that situation. But I think what could have happened in that situation is I could have just been gone, and that opportunity, you know, and that person would have gotten their way. And I'm guessing that I was triggering things that person just couldn't
handle. It sounds like you handled it very well.
I'm learning.
You didn't just turn it into something even more adversarial and aggressive.
Yeah, I was tempted.
We're all tempted in that direction. So this is where the Buddhist practice of loving kindness comes in. What does this mean? It means that no matter what people do to you, you look for a way to show loving kindness to them instead of trying to get back at them. And it's not a strategy that will definitely work. You're doing it because this is who you have become. If she were to use this method so that she could get him to change his mind and be nice to her, that would not be the true practice. She's only doing this because this is who I've become, thanks to the teachings. Not, this will work, and the adversarial approach won't work. I mean, that may be true, that may happen, but we can't rely on that. Because one of the givens is you could do all the right things and the wrong thing will result. First,
Well, I that answered a lot of my question, but I have a situation where someone is very nice to me and it bothers me. It just really bothers me that...
Don't trust the motivation, you mean? Or?
Well, I just... I mean, it just gets annoying when somebody's trying to do everything for you. And I don't see the... I mean, I know they're trying to be nice, but for some reason, I don't like it.
Well, would you be able to open a dialogue with that person and say, I appreciate how you're trying to be nice, but... maybe you could lighten up on it a little, because, you know.
I can, but I feel a little odd.
I know, it's so.
Yeah.
We're not used to speaking up in that way.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I found out that once you take these little awkward steps and reverse the usual sense of, you reverse the usual sense of embarrassment when you take the little steps in a new direction. So if you were to try to open up the topic in some way,
right.
You know, you don't have to be so nice to me in all those ways, but I do appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
So you're always mentioning the appreciation, but you're trying to show the other person that maybe he could have, you know, better limits around it, so that it doesn't become interfering. We're always going to be having problems with people.
That's the problem.
So we have to come up with a way of living that is our particular conscientious choice. And then we just bring that to every person, no matter what he or she does. We always come forth in the style of loving kindness, because we have noticed that this brings out the best in us. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the kernels, because when something like that, when the shadow is appearing, it's hard without a list in front of you to know what the other side.
What's the positive side?
Yeah. So. I'm wondering if there's a practice for that.
Yes, she's asking. Yeah, the kernel of value, K-E-R-N-E-L, kernel of value. Mm-hmm. That inside, and this came as a big surprise to me when I was working on this. That book came out in 1999. I was working on it in like 1995. And I remember how pleasantly surprised I was when I realized that there isn't even one negative quality of humans that is somehow irredeemable. If you work with it, you can bring it into its more valuable component. And the easiest way to look at this is, or what helps me the most, is if you think of the famous philosophical statement, virtue is in the middle. So when you choose that middle path, that's where you are at your best. And then on one end of the spectrum, away from the middle, is the lack. And on the other end of the spectrum, from the middle, is the excess. So let's use a simple example. In the middle is courage. That's certainly a virtue. On the far right is the deficiency. That's cowardice. On the far left is the excess. That's foolhardiness, where you risk too much. So the middle is the kernel of value of both ends. And you can do that with everything. You place something in the middle and you go one end to the other end. One side is the deficiency, defect, and the other side is the excess. And everything is like that. So let's say in the middle is healthy adult love. Deficiency would be hate. Excess will be clinging. And it works with every single word in the dictionary that is about how humans act. Has those same three possibilities. So I'm always looking for, like, how do I stand in the middle of this so that I acknowledge deficiency in myself, I acknowledge excess in myself, and I continually do what it takes to bring myself to this center place. Question.
Another Buddha's brain.
Yes, I read that and I really liked
that
it.
From a neurological point of view, it appears the brain has 5 times the interest and capacity to focus on the dark than the light. Is that true?
Yes, that fits because in order for us to survive in caveman times, we had to be much more conscious of the dangers than of the fun stuff, what little fun stuff there was. You're always on the lookout. Other tribes, saber-toothed tiger. The worst can happen. You have to think that way. That stayed with us, even though we no longer live in that kind of a world where there are so many, where we are beset by dangers of all kinds constantly. It's not really like that now. But yet we still have that. The worst might happen, so I better be careful. Yeah?
Okay. I understand most of what you're saying, except for one part I need clarity on. So
yeah.
I understand seeing the shadow and reacting to it in others because you have it within yourself, and then realizing, oh, I have that too. So let's say there's somebody annoying you, and then you think, God, you know, I've got that same thing in me somewhere. And bringing it into light, looking for what's good in it. But then is that in itself the transformation that's going to no longer make that something that annoys you? Like,
no.
By doing that?
Then you start acting in accord with that over and over again. So
because
that
at one point you said you would convert, like you do it to convert the other, and that kind of threw me off because, but then later you said it's not about the other, it's about how you've become. So you wouldn't be doing this also in a hope that whatever you're about to say next will help them see the light, right? That's not part of it?
That's not the purpose of it, although you might have that hope. You might say it would be nice if it could work that way.
But you're not trying to convert.
That can't be the motivation. Mm-hmm. Motivation will always be, what can I do to bring out more and more of what's hidden in the dark, bring it into light, just as you said, and there I will see the value that it offers.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the scenario I need to see is if like the movie theater thing, if that one's not a good one, because for me that wouldn't get to me that much, but if someone's behaving in a way and you realize it is part of your shadow and you carry it too, that's like an example of then what you would say after you've thought about all this and you've located the nugget of it, and like then what could you say to the person, or do you just say nothing because you don't need to once you've done that?
No, you don't say anything to the other. It's just
like if you were going to say something because they were, you know, annoying you before you did this whole thing. I don't know. I guess I need to play it out further because it's hard to. I definitely have been able to recognize the shadow parts of me that others have, and I understand this part about seeing the nugget, but the part I'm having trouble with is then how that transforms it so it doesn't bug you the next time still.
Once it is no longer hidden inside as something unconscious, it goes into the realm of information. It no longer has the power to upset you, because now you have seen it in yourself and worked with it. You have compassion for those who are still lost in the dark side, and you just take it as information. I really have seen this type of change occur. That's how it becomes different. Because the reason is bothering us so much is that it's too far down, hidden in ourselves. Once it comes out into the open and we work with it and we find the golden kernel, then when we see other people doing what we used to do, we feel more compassion. Another one of the spiritual practices. Does this give some answer to what you're saying?
I think it does. I think I was just thinking of a certain scenario and how I could have reacted to it in those circumstances, and I'm having trouble, you know, maybe it's the finding the compassion and how that would, in the scenario I'm thinking, like help the situation.
Well, remember, it's not a strategy to change someone,
right,
or to change the situation. It's, oh good, I'm finding out something about where my own work is. Mm-hmm. And that has become much more important, mm-hmm, than convincing someone else how wrong he is or how he could be different. Mm-hmm. That becomes less and less crucial. It's more like, oh, he's like that. Okay. Wish him the best. Hope he finds enlightenment. Mm-hmm.
The amazing thing is, it does change the other person when you're not reacting.
That's the usual.
Because they're not getting the world usually mirrors them a certain way back, because and then when that doesn't happen, it usually comes back in that.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point.
I think you said it. Wish him the best. And may you find enlightenment. It's about turning on a light. Sometimes if you turn on a light, it helps people to see themselves.
Yeah.
Turn on a light.
I've been doing this loving kindness practice, and it's really helping me. Because whenever somebody does something, I say this under my breath, may you calm down, may you find Buddha's path, may you be happy, may you be enlightened, anything like that. And it changes the way I relate to others. It doesn't necessarily change the other person, although sometimes it could, as you said, and eventually it probably will make an impact. But it certainly changes our way of being with others. Someone asked me yesterday about another teacher. Said, I want to go on the topic of the terrible evil things that people do and how we're supposed to react. So I said, of course, that, you know, if you could look at it from the point of view of the loving kindness practice, then you are aspiring for the change that can happen in them, and you're placing an intention for that change to occur, but at the same time, you're acknowledging your utter powerlessness to change anyone, and you're accepting the given of life that some people will always be turning toward the dark side and doing terrible, evil, criminal, bad things to others, and that part of being here is accepting that as a fact, and instead of making them into monsters, to somewhere in the thought process to say to yourself, of course I have that in me too. So you always want to add that, of course I have that in me too. It's just that it doesn't come out in that way. It might come out in some other more subtle ways. There's a poem by the Roman poet Terence. It starts with the words, "Nothing human is alien from me." In other words, anything a human could do, be it Hitler or Mother Teresa, anything a human can do, I can do, given the right circumstances. So once you see that, the sense of division and opposition changes into, oh, we're all in this together, and some people do that, and I need to protect myself from it, and I need to place the intention that they somehow find the light, and I too could go in that same direction. Because the worst thing we can do is project words like monster. Hitler was a monster. When we say that, we are taking a chance that we will make sure that we have him be so different from being human that we won't notice that we sometimes have terrible prejudices too. We may not do the crazy things that he did. I'm sure we won't. But it's still on a spectrum. One off-color joke is on the same spectrum as ovens. Once you get that, you don't use words like monster, you use words like he turned himself over, he let himself be possessed by the dark side. And of course he was given permission then to act out his darkness by all the people who went along with his program. It isn't that evil people lead us into evil. It's that they're crazy enough to act out our darkest wishes. And that's what he was doing. Okay, this has been a delightful topic to talk about. Other questions before we wind up? Yeah.
Well, going back to the question you had about whether changing myself is going to impact the person who's doing something bad.
Yeah.
If he's directing his doing something bad to me, and I change my impulsive reaction, I do change him. He expected to get the impulse.
Mm-hmm.
He expected to have an effect that I'm not allowing.
Yes, you've changed the style of the interaction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes
a lot of
sense.
So, I mean, that touches his very motivation, really.
Yes, hopefully. Right.
so that things would be done differently, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to make it a learning event.
Yeah, learning events is a better word than teaching events, because you don't want to make it as if you're above other people and you're going to show them how it's supposed to be. That's what I meant by you do what you do, because this is who you are. You don't do what you think will make other people respond in a certain way.
That's a growing event.
It's more of a growing event. Good. It's a good way to put it. Okay. Here we go. Thank you. I'm going to end with this affirmation, but before I do, do I have enough further? Do you want to pass them along? Okay. So I'm going to stay, and if you want me to sign any of my books, or if you have questions about them, like what they're about, and I'll put extra ones up on the counter if you want another one for a friend. I'll be staying up here to sign. And this is four CDs. It's a summary. I mean, it's a shortened version. They took out all the parts that were not so important. But they do have the people's questions, which is very good. Because this is a mature audience. Four CDs, and it's $30. So if you're interested, they'll be right up here. And as I say, this is the affirmation that I've been using. And I think it really helps us work with this shadow side. May I show all the love I have in any way I can, here, now, and all the time, to everyone on earth, including me. Since love is what we are and why, now nothing matters to me more. Well, thank you all for your attention.
Thank you. So I'll just remind everyone that we will shortly have a donation bowl on the counter, because I forgot to put it out. But that will be happen, and we share that with our speakers to further their work, but also to help maintain this space for events like this in the future. And as has been pointed out to you, there are many possible avenues to deepen your appreciation of our speakers' work here on these two tables and on that table over there. So please do avail yourself of those, and thank you so much for coming tonight to Many Rivers, and we look forward to seeing you again in the future, sometimes when the shelves are pushed away and sometimes when they're not.
Thank you.
Thank you.